We're good.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mitch. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I know it.
Thank you for coming today.
So before I start my story, I wanted to pass around some pictures. And these pictures aren't even that old, about 2 years. 2 years, and one is like 1 year. But if you know how to use an iPhone, it's the same thing. You just kind of swing it across. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to pass it around so at least you can see a little bit of where I was and to where I am today. So I've been in program for almost 6 years or 7 years. I've kind of lost track already. But when I came into program, it was kind of awkward for me. Like, I wasn't sure if it was the right place for me. I wasn't sure if the people, you know, had it together. But I really, honestly, I didn't know I didn't have it together. But I came back. And when I started, I also did a lot with phone meetings before I came to the actual meeting. But what brought me into the rooms was, you know, I've tried different things like Weight Watchers. That was probably my main go-to for weight loss. And I was a lifetime member, and I did that in my 20s. And after that one shot of being a lifetime member, I never, ever, ever came back to that goal number in all my years. And what Weight Watchers does is if you get a letter from your doctor, they'll just elevate the number. So, you know, so instead of, you know, being 170, you can raise it to 200. And if you're, you know, if you want to raise it to 220, you can raise it. So it's really, it's kind of a crazy thing. But I did believe in Weight Watchers in the sense that they knew a lot about portion control. And I really believe that they understood, you know, the calories in and calories out that would give you the weight loss. What didn't really gel with me were those meetings that I'd go to, because, you know, it got really old after a while, because every time I go to a meeting, all they did is talk about food and how we could shave, you know, points off of a piece of candy or a piece of chocolate. And what I didn't understand at the time is what OA has taught us in the 12 steps is that you have an allergic reaction to some foods, and then in other areas you have compulsive behaviors. And I never intellectually understood that. Nobody's ever told me that. I've been around people that are compulsive overeaters. I have friends, even friends today, that are probably, I can't judge them, but they're probably a lot worse than I am when I came into the room. So let's just leave it at that, because their numbers got really high. So when I did some research, I was reading books, and most of the things I read made a lot of sense. But this book said, before you start any diet, whether it was Weight Watchers or whatever you're into, you really better understand if you have a eating disorder. And I never even, how can I have an eating disorder? I'm not skinny. I go up and down, up and down. So when I did that, I was like, eating disorder. And then, you know, doing some Google searches on the internet, I tripped on OA. I really never heard of OA. I knew what AA was. I knew a little bit about the 12 steps, but not really. I thought it was more or less for addicts and people, you know, that were derelicts and, you know, I just didn't see myself as a 12-stepper. Let's just leave it at that. But what really tripped me up is when you go out to the World Services website, there was a series of questions. I don't remember the number. I think there were 15. And I honestly answered them. And I would say 90% of them I got right. Maybe one didn't apply to me. But of all of them, I got almost all of them. So then I was like, whoa, this is pretty crazy. So what I did is I got onto phone meetings. I kind of got a feel for the people. I had the nerve to go to a meeting. I think it was the Sunday meeting in Edison. That was my first meeting. And like I said, I was really overwhelmed. It was a big group. It was a big circle of people. But when I got to the rooms, you know, I kind of was interested. I said, I've got to do something different because, you know, I couldn't do the same thing over and over with Weight Watchers. And then after a couple of meetings, you know, being a compulsive person, I compulsively went to as many meetings as I could possibly do in a week. And that went on for a period of time. And then at that point, I was pretty much hooked and understood, you know, what OA was about. I really was hooked into this. Like, I really believe that this was the place that I wanted to be. And the reason why is because I felt like the people there understood me. Like, I heard their stories, and then, you know, when I matched it up with my stories, it's like I really felt like I was in the right place. As far as my food plan, when I came into the program, again, my main knowledge was, you know, Weight Watchers. And what was really cool about Weight Watchers is that I've learned over time that you need to measure and have portion control. So that came very natural for me. Like, I had the scales, I had the scoopers, I had all that stuff. What I never did for myself was challenge the sugar part, the sugar, you know, particularly. I don't think white flour is as much of an issue for me. I think it's more of like, do I get the best bang for my buck? I'd rather eat whole grains and, you know, wheat and all that kind of stuff. But I can't say if I had a piece of white bread, I'm going to go out and go on a crazy binge. But I can tell you, with sugar, like baked goods, you know, the black and white sandwich cookie, if anybody knows what they are, if I took just one double stuffed one, I would go back to the, you know, I'd go eat it at the TV, and then all I would do is obsess for about 5 minutes, go back and then grab three instead of one, because I started with one, and I was like, oh, I can handle this. I have three with a glass of milk. I would say within the hour, I would eat a sleeve. I would absolutely eat a sleeve. I don't think I would eat the whole bag, but I would absolutely eat a sleeve. And calorically, if you know anything about that type of food, it's just really bad. It's just, first of all, it's a ton of sugar, and the caloric value is horrible. And the next morning, I would just wake up with like a food fog. Like, I would just be numb in the morning. I would sleep good. I would sleep like a rock. Like, as a matter of fact, when I couldn't sleep well, what I would do is I would eat and stuff myself, you know, with sugary things, and that would help me sleep. So when I came to OA, I really believed in the Weight Watcher program, again, about the portion control. But what I did is I started to look at things a little bit differently. I said, what do I do? Because, you know, they promote their products and these sweet, all processed foods and boxes and frozen food. So I said, I'm going to use that program, but with that in mind, you know, eliminate foods that would give me a problem, like we're taught in the program, before I start the steps. So I did. And I came in because I only knew what people told me, and people were pretty radical. They said, you know, you can't have white flour, you can't have, you know, sugar, you can't have this, you can't have that. When I came to the program, I didn't know the difference. I can tell you from my experience now being in program that the people here are just as sick as I am. And what I know is, what I've learned over the 6-7 years is that what works for one person may not work for another person. And I don't think it's appropriate for people to dictate or tell you this is what you have to eat, or if you want to, you know, be abstinent. It's a very personal thing. Even the steps, I really believe, is a personal thing, because I don't think there's one way to do steps, where sometimes you'll meet people and they say it's this way, or you're just not doing it, or, you know, I just don't believe that. That's where I've come to believe after 6 or 7 years, because just like foods, I think everybody has their own, you know, wiring, and what works for them may not work for somebody else. And I really believe in my heart, when they created OA, that was the main vein of what the program is about. Like, I really don't believe that there was one way to do it. I really believe that it was what works for people, as far as, you know, the food plan and as well as the steps. And then the higher power part, you know, I had religion, but it was more of a, it was more or less a ritual. It was more of a family gathering for food or a holiday ritual. You know, I would go to the place, and, you know, I didn't really have a connection. I never really had this thing with God. I never really was spiritual until I came to OA. And for me, I've seen a vast difference in 6 years. Because what happened was, if I would be riddled with anxiety, fear, and a lot of it had to do with my upbringing, because my family, that's just their DNA. They can't help themselves. I can't change them, but I've matured in the 6 years. I keep barriers with them. I limit my exposure, and it's not to be harsh or be a mean person, but I have to be healthy. I have to limit my talk, like people that are toxic with me. I have to limit my exposure, because it's so ingrained in me that when you're around it, it just brings things up. And I'm still working through it. So what I've done is I've articulated, they know I'm in program, and I've articulated what my needs are, and you know, if they can't handle it, or if, you know, I can, all I can do is try to explain to them what I feel or what's going on. You know, for example, like if you call and you have a crisis, like, you know, whether you lost a job or somebody's sick, you know, you get on the phone and, you know, the drama begins on the other end, and then they call you 10 minutes, you know, an hour, and then every day you have to give an update and all this stuff. And that's just so not programmed. And then from a spiritual aspect, what happened for me is, I don't see it as God, I just see this as more of a spirit or a feeling. And when bad things happen today, not when I was before programmed, but when bad things happen or things are challenges, what I say is there's something in it. There's a reason why my higher power has put me in this position. And what I do is I try to look for the good in it. I try to look, you know, what is he trying to teach me, or she's trying to teach me, and what could possibly be around the next corner, or the next door. And it's never proven me wrong. It's always been, you know, very positive. Whether you lose a job, you get even a better job, or if you go for a job and you don't get the job, well, you know, even though I didn't get this job, there'll be something better that's going to come. There's a reason why things don't happen. So for me, that higher power just, you know, took me off the ledge. It just brings me in a good place, and I really, really value, you know, the relationship that I have. When I came into the program, I don't want to use the word, but I had the pink cloud. I was like a rock star. I had, you know, really good, you know, physical recovery. I didn't eat the sugar, and a whole year goes by, and then it was New Year's, and, you know, one thing led to another, and it's not like opening a faucet where you just wake up one day and you just pound the food down. It didn't work at all like that for me. It was more of a slippery, sliding kind of thing, and I think ego kicked in, and also when things are going really well, oh, I don't need program, I can just do it on my own, and you know, go out there and do things. And, you know, I came across some really deep challenges with a job, a new job. And, you know, before I could blink an eye, I was in relapse. And that relapse didn't stop for about 2 years, 2.5 years, roughly, once I got into the relapse. And what saved me were a couple of things. One is I did avoid the rooms a little bit, more from embarrassment. But once I got through it, you know, and I got there, it was so much better being in the rooms in relapse than being on my own and not being around people that understood, or, you know, at least give me some hope. That's all I can ask for is hope. And this particular meeting was my savior. Back in December, almost 2 years, it'll be this December, it'll be 2 years, there was a 100-pound series meeting. And they just found all these great people that lost all this weight, 100 pounds. And I didn't come to the beginning. I came somewhere in the middle. Someone had told me, and I came and I went in that room. And I was really at the bottom. I mean, when I was at the bottom, I was the guy that you saw in that picture. I mean, I was done. I was cooked. And something just sparked. And what I did... After I left after that night, that was like the beginning of my recovery. Like I was coming out of that relapse. And one of the things that sparked me was movement, like exercise. And I love exercise. And it has nothing to do with weight loss. This is all for mental attitude, camaraderie, you know, going to a gym. Just like I come here for what I need, I love going to the gym with being with people that have common goals, that really want to take care of themselves, that take a lot of pride. I just find that by moving and working out, it almost validates that I'm worth something, like I'm worth it, you know? And the last thing you want to do is eat a sleeve after a really good workout, because it's really just going backwards, you're just sabotaging yourself. So right after that meeting, I committed, I said, that's the missing thing, I've got to start moving. Because when I was in relapse, I was in a serious food fog. I slept relentlessly, like even on the weekends when I should be doing things with the family. All I wanted to do was sleep. I just couldn't move. I didn't, you know, feel good. Even my wardrobe, like, I'm not saying I'm the snappiest dresser, but I had a limited wardrobe. I had the XXX jeans and the black sweatshirt with the hood, and that would be my uniform in the winter. I would just put on that and just keep running around with the same clothes. I mean, I remember, I'm not a dirty person, but I do remember where if I worked at the house, there would be like several days where I may not even shower. And it wasn't because I didn't want to. It was like sleep was more important to me than showering. It's crazy. So I adopted a workout program. You know, after that meeting sparked, I made the decision to make the turn. I joined the gym, which I've joined gyms before, but I made a commitment. I went to Central State, and I'm not here to plug any gym, but this is what worked for me. But I joined a gym that was a little bit different in style. The people are there for really for health. People that go there really want to be there. And then there's a bunch of young people that go there. I still don't understand why they pay, you know, three or four times the price of a regular gym, but they like it. There's something special about this gym. And you know, I got myself a personal trainer, it was like building blocks. Like I was so broken, I was so out of shape. Like we just had to work, you know, building blocks. And I could say, like it's since that January, it's a year and a half now. This January will be 2 years. I've continued to go. I mean, I showed my wife because we had some insurance things. She said, "You will never go. It's too far from your house." And I had them print out a report because I scan my key when I go in. And I must have went like 180 or 200 times, like some ridiculous number, to the gym. And she was like, you know, I got credibility back with her because I lost total credibility with my family. They just didn't want to hear it. And even OA, they kind of were down on. And they, when I went through relapse, they really believed that you people at OA caused my relapse, like because you poisoned my mind and you know made me weak and in an eighth. They didn't understand that. I can understand where they're coming from, but I lost total credibility with my family before I got back on the wagon. So today, you know where my life is. I continue to work out, you know, with my trainer. I do that once or twice a week, but I've expanded to other areas. Like I love spinning. That's a bike class, which is an hour long. And I mean, I'm with really super fit people. Like my you know, my tolerance has increased so much. And another area that I got explored was boxing and kickboxing. And so in other words, I'm going out of my shell. I'm trying. My trainer's been so good to me that he's got me interested in so many different things. I even ran my first 5K back in June. It was a color run, and it was a big rainstorm. And believe me, I was never a runner, and do I like it? Running is okay. It's just he doesn't think that it's the best thing for me to just pound the pavement every day. He wants me to mix it up. Do, you know, bike one day, you know, do boxing another day, do jogging one day. So this way, everything keeps, you know, your body's confused and it gets, you know, gets the full benefit of the workout. And as far as, you know, my eating, I could tell you that where I am today is like, it's no more black and white. Like in the old me was either I was really good and really thin, or I was a maniac with food and I was really overweight. What I could tell you in this disease is when I was in OA, which is really bizarre, when I went through relapse, my highest weight went up 20 extra pounds. So in program, I was the heaviest person I ever was in my life. And this is after being in program for 3 or 4 years. And I've heard other people in the rooms tell me they've never been at these record numbers and they became that person in these rooms. So I think that was part of my journey. Like I think I needed to have, I don't think it's a good thing or a bad thing, but my journey had to go through that relapse to really understand the severity and you know of what this disease can do. What really kills me is this disease takes a little piece of you every day and it wears you down. And it's not like black and white where like if you're a drug addict, you know, you have a dramatic death. Like being with food, it's a very, very slow death. And it's a horrible thing because as your body keeps deteriorating, you become less and less able, you become more isolated. You don't want to be around people. it's just terrible. Like, I mean, who wants to live a life like that? So again, the program for me is just been phenomenal. I just wish I had started years ago because I never really knew much about it. But now I've got my answers. My food is clean. I have to tell you though, being an addict, what I have to do is I have to always reevaluate my food. So in other words, what worked for me when I started isn't working for me today. What I find is there's a lot of gray foods that you think you can handle, and you do a pretty good job handling it. But once I start the obsession, in other words, after I have it, like I'm like, oh, I wish I could get more, or after I'm done, I want to get more, or when I measure it, instead of honestly measuring it at a full tablespoon, I'm like taking, you know, scoops of peanut butter, and that's not good. So then I had to come clean again when I was working the steps, and say, you know what, I probably shouldn't be having this stuff. And it's not the stuff that you buy in a jar; it's the really good stuff that you get at a machine, and you know they grind it all up. So I'm at that point where I'm willing. I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to have my recovery. I have a great support system outside of the rooms. Like I think what you do outside the rooms is just as important what goes on in the rooms. And I know a lot of people, you know, just make their whole life, you know, internally within the rooms. But I have a great, you know, team of people at the gym. I've got new friends. I've also did a lot of weeding. I mean, I went through, you know, friends that I've had for years that just weren't, you know, growing with me or helping me. I consider them toxic. But I had my own method of, you know, limiting my exposure with them. Sometimes I still have to see these people, but I do it maybe once every 6 months instead of every month. I set boundaries, so when they cross the boundary, I can, you know, calmly say, you know, this is not how it's going to be, you know. The old me, you know, would be a people pleaser, doormat, you know, and if it's something that I don't want to do, or it's going to, you know, if it's going to jeopardize, you know, my program, you know, I stick up for myself, including my family. I had to set some serious boundaries with them. They were probably my hardest people to work with, was my family, because my son just, he's not a compulsive overeater, he's a very good athlete, and he thinks it's all about weakness, you know, like you can handle this, and he learned a lot from his mother. And again, I finally got the credibility back after my recovery from that last relapse. Now, what gave me credibility was my consistency at the gym, running, you know, the marathon, you know, or hitting a new high, you know, benching, you know, big plates. So I've earned their respect. I've got their respect now, and it took about 4 or 5 years. So I used to have to, you know, on a Sunday, I would have to say, look, I got to be back for my Sunday night meeting, and they would just make me feel guilty and say, well, what's more important, your family or your meeting? And I go, well, I can't be a good father if I don't, you know, I try to explain to them what we learn in these rooms, but they don't get it. They and, you know, to some degree, they get it, but they don't get it. And I think Edison's going to have a family meeting coming up in a couple months, and I mentioned it to my wife just as a chuckle, not like she was going to jump all over me and say, oh, I'm going. But she actually said, we'll see. So that to me speaks volumes that, you know, I've come a long way. So what I also learned a lot from the program are the steps. The steps, to me, I actually had a really good industrial strength person on my first round with the steps. And when I got done with it, as I said, I was in the pink cloud. I thought I graduated, even though intellectually I didn't graduate. I didn't. I just went through all the steps. I didn't really live it. Like, you're supposed to go through 9, 10, and, or 10, 11, and 12, and, you know, and there's questions you fill out when you hit a road bump, you know, or do inventory at the end of the day. Those are the things that have to happen. And I just refused, or I didn't choose to do that. I felt like I was doing great. I didn't need it. And I think that was part of my problem. You know, my ego kicked in. I thought I could handle it. And so I find that the steps are really, really important, because the steps is what takes you off the ledge, that takes your anxiety down. you know, the higher power and the fear. All those things feed into, you know, grabbing food, because what food does is it just calms us. It's just the thing that takes us off the ledge, at least for me. That's been my experience. And other people have other vices, whether it's drugs or alcohol or whatever, gambling. So the steps to me are really important. I take it really serious, and I'm working the steps right now, not just for myself, but I'm working with people. I'm sponsoring or co-sponsor. I don't know what we call it. We're a team. We answer questions. We go through the steps. We kind of follow the whole thing. So I'm looking forward to that, you know, especially the step four. What I also realize about the steps is that nothing is the same. So when you came in, you were a completely different person. Like what I was 5 or 6 years ago, I am not the same person today. Not that I'm, you know, different. I mean, I'm still Mitch, but I'm a different person. In other words, intellectually, I'm in a whole different place with programs. So I think just revisiting the steps again just really helps fine-tune or catch things that you didn't catch on the first pass. Because there's a lot of things that are so buried that you're not even capable of understanding it, nor you should probably. It's like an onion. You have to go through layers. So that's what I'm looking forward to on this round. As far as, you know, my food plan, I don't really get involved with Weight Watchers anymore. I don't believe, and I just don't like the whole philosophy of it. I don't like their products. But at the gym, I learned something different, which you count macronutrients. And what macronutrients are three different categories. There's fat, there's carbohydrates, and there's protein. So there's three components to it. And what the deal is that you need to find out what the right ratio is for each one of those components. And you could take in the food, but once you hit your number in any of those components, then you know you can't have any more. And what I've got out of it is that I realized that different foods have different reactions for me. Like carbohydrates and pasta and stuff like that just makes me sluggish and tired and want to take a nap. But yet when I eat a higher amount of protein, I have more energy. And that works for me. It may not work for somebody else. So my food plan right now has a lot more protein in it. What I can tell you is today I have no deprivation. You know, I try never to go to a meal starving. Like I always try to have a small snack in between a meal, whether it's a protein bar or fruit or something. But I cannot let myself go to that point of starvation. If I go out to dinner, even the most expensive dinner where we're paying $100 a plate, I will drink a protein shake. And most people say, well, why would you ruin your appetite? Because the last thing I need to do is go in there like a ravenous lunatic, and then, you know, they'll put down the bread or, you know, the appetizers. And so whenever I eat my dinner, I'm never really ravenous. I mean, sometimes it goes there, but I try to keep it very mellow, very level. So it shouldn't spike up or down, because once you go to that other point, there's no stopping you until the point, you know, you realize it's too late. Another thing that I learned about program was, which blew my mind, this is the new revelation, is that when you look at AA or you read a book or you see a movie about AA, it's always about the sponsor and the sponsee, and the sponsee is supposed to call the sponsor, I'm going to pick up the liquor, I'm in a bar, can you get me out of here, whatever. You know, can you visually see that? I've never called anybody when I picked up. When I was in OA, like if I picked up food or when I went to that relapse, or even when I had a bad day, I never called anybody. What I would do is I would have it, and then the next day or the day after that, I would come clean with it. But why didn't I call the day it happened or right before it was going to happen? I don't. And the only thing I could think of is that I'm an addict and nothing was going to stop me to have what I wanted. And that meant not calling somebody. Okay. So what I do today now, which is a little different, is I get into those situations. Like if my family wants to go to a sweet place or a dessert place, again, I told you, like I don't get really hungry. I always try to have some extra protein or this or that. I will text three or four people in program and say, hey, I'm over at this place and my family's really enjoying this, but, you know, I'm okay, you know. And I'm in a good place now. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to build a habit so that when I'm vulnerable or when I'm less when I don't have, you know, again, if I'm vulnerable or if something slips and I'm, you know, not spiritually connected, I'm trying to make it so that I have a habit of texting people when I'm in a situation that would cause me to pick up or eat. So, as far as my family and my friends, I mean, my family knows. As far as friends, I've skirt around with it, or I tell them, you know, I tell them that it's a disease. I tell them that there's places you can go to, like down in Florida, just like an alcoholic or a drug addict, to detox. And I do talk about it, but even people that need it, like, 'cause I'm not here to sell it. I mean, it's all, you know, based on, you know, attraction. And I don't know, like, people just aren't willing or to really learn more. And that's okay, because that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm just, you know, telling them what my needs are. As far as the weight loss part, or the physical part, what's happened to me, and again, I don't know why, but again, remember I told you I had the extra 20 being in program. Well, my baseline now went up 20 pounds. So I'm not where I want to be physically. I'm telling you, I work out really hard. I mean, the people at the gym are trying to figure it out. You know, we're tweaking things. You know, right now I eat like 2,000 calories, which I think is a pretty generous amount of food for a man that, you know, exercises and stuff. But, you know, there's two sides to it. You know, so maybe I need to tweak it and eat a little more on the days that I work out, because maybe my body is going through deprivation. So all I could say is that I'm willing to explore. I'm willing to try different things. The good thing is that I'm not yo-yoing. I have all the same clothes now. You know, from, you know, I just go into the closet, and it's not like I blew through a whole bunch of clothes and then have to move them into the basement and then, you know, have the heavier clothes and then keep going out and buying new clothes. And I'm not really doing that. So all I'm doing really is just experimenting and seeing, you know, what I can do with the food plan. Am I where I want it to be? You know, from a emotional or mental state, no. I shouldn't. Again, that's part of my disease. I shouldn't be so obsessed over it. I should be proud of the accomplishments that I made. I should be thrilled that I'm not the person that was in there. You know, I'm living every day. I'm really healthy, but yet the disease in me wants more, and I think that's part of the compulsion. You want more, so I'm working at it. But at least I'm willing to experiment and try different things and tweak the food. But you have to be honest. You have to measure. You have to count. Because without doing that, you know, you're not going to go anywhere. As far as the meetings and stuff, I have a couple meetings that I like to go to. And I just think it's important to mix it up. Go to a meeting that you never go to. I know that, for me anyway, I'm trying to reach out to people that I've met in program over the 6 years that have disappeared or that are in relapse, and I've reached out to a couple, I've encouraged a couple, because I know for me, it was so important that people, you know, accepted me for what I was and try to get me through, you know, my relapse. So all I'm trying to do is pay it forward. I'm just trying to explain to them, you know, what happened to me, and you can get it back, and it's you know, it's not impossible. And you know, again, I just, to me, for me, that relapse was part of my journey. I had to really hit me in the head and say, this is really, I know we talk about it, but until you go through that, it's like the light went on. Now I mean business. Like, I am not gonna, you know, waver or take chances anymore. How much time do we have?
Let's see here. You're doing great. You actually have 8 more minutes.
8 more minutes. That's really good.
Can you sing something?
I know. You're on tape. I'm just trying to think. So some other areas. Where I am today with my quality of life, first of all, my relationships are so much better with everybody, whether it's friends or family. I see people that are very dysfunctional, that don't have program, and I see the angst and I see the pain. We were with people today, and all I can do is listen, and I basically taught program to them. You know, it's like I go, you're not going to change the person. Who cares? You know, like, just get off it and, you know, move on, or, you know, just accept them for the way they are and limit your time with them and so forth. So the program has taught me so much that you just become a much stronger person in other people's eyes. You know, you get this leadership kind of, not leadership, but you become, you know, you just become more comfortable in your skin. Let's just leave it at that. And which I'm really grateful for. Another thing I did recently, too, is I went back to my high school reunion, which I haven't done in, like, a lot of years. Like, I never went to any of my reunions. But I just came to grips with it this Thanksgiving, and I went. And rekindled, like, a whole bunch of friends, you know, on social media through it. And they're not my best friends or I'm going to, you know, live with them. But it was just so nice to reconnect with my past. And I was just so blown away. Like, I met a childhood friend that lived up the street who I never even thought, like, he thought about me or, you know. And the guy was in tears, and he's telling me all these stories and things we used to do. And it's just, it's so mind-blowing to know how much impact you have on other people. But when you're in the disease, your perception is warped. It's like you almost feel isolated, or people really don't give a crap about who you are. It's so not true, and that's all part of the disease. So it was really nice to see these people after 35 years and, you know, rekindle and you know, share stories and family things. And I grew up in North Jersey. I'm down in Central Jersey. So I have a whole different life down here than I had up there. I didn't keep many of those friends. And, you know, I think that the takeaway here is, you know, about boundaries. I just think, at least for me, this is what works for me, is that once you make a breakthrough, or once you really understand the components of the program, again, I think in order to stay in program, you have to be very selective in who you want in your circle. And family, you can't really make a decision. They're not your friends. But like I said, you could limit, and you could explain in a calm manner, and, you know, ask them to respect your wishes. And so many people want to give you their opinion, or this is how you need to do it. And we know in program, you know, we just worry about ourselves. We keep our side clean, and we have serenity when all these people that are trying to tell you are crazy, you know, off on another place. Some places where people live just breathe on, you know, gossip. That's all they do from morning to night. They talk, they go to a party, they talk from this person to that person. So again, what program has taught me is to limit the gossip, you know, limit it about talking to people, and keep it positive. And, you know, I'm grateful that my family, on the most part, understand this, and they've been, you know, thank God they have good attributes that help me, you know, get through. What I want to do is I just want to read a poem before we close.
Sure.
Am I allowed?
Yes, of course.
Okay. So before we close, I wanted to share something that I got in program, I guess, a while ago, and I came across it recently. And I love reading this thing because it's somebody wrote this, but it's such an amazing, this is really amazing. So I'm going to share it with you guys now. And this was from October 11th, 2011, because I have everything in my iPad and everything's date stamped, and so that's how old this is. So this is how it goes. I'm your disease. I hate meetings. I hate your higher power. I hate anyone who has a program. To all who come in contact with me, I wish you suffering and death. Allow me to introduce myself. I am the disease of addiction. Alcoholism, drugs, eating disorders. I am cunning, baffling, and powerful. That's me. I've killed millions and enjoy doing it. I love to catch you by surprise. I love pretending I'm your friend or lover. I'm giving you comfort. Wasn't I there when you were lonely? When you wanted to die, didn't you call on me? I love to make you hurt. I love to make you cry. Better yet, I love it when I make you so numb. You can't hurt and you can't cry. You feel nothing at all. I give you instant gratification. All I ask for return is a long-term suffering. I've always been there for you. When things are going right, you invite me back. You say you didn't deserve to be happy. I agreed with you. Together, we were able to destroy your life. People don't take me seriously. They take strokes seriously. They take heart attacks seriously. They take diabetes seriously. Yet without my help, these things wouldn't be possible. I'm such a hated disease, yet I don't come uninvited. You choose to have me. Many have chosen me instead of love and peace. I hate all of you who work the 12-step program. Your program, your meetings, and your higher power weakens me. I can't function in a manner I am accustomed to. I'm your disease. For now, I must lie here quietly. You don't see me, but I'm growing more powerfully every day. When you settle for mere existence, I thrive. When you feel fully alive, I weaken. But I'm always here waiting for you. Until we meet again, I wish you continued suffering and death. And that was somebody who wrote it for program, but that is like so my story. And this really reminds me when I read this, at least once or twice a week, that I realize that this disease is really, really a death sentence. So anyway, thank you for having me share today. Thank you for who came today. We have a big crowd here, about 40. Thank you. And that's it.
Thanks. Perfect. Thank you.
I had to get that 40.
So,